Sanje Dāgē jēgyō jēbē sōnō jēn, dōlō pēnshē sāngjēn rūpār, jō sāngjēn jēdōn sōjē chōnō, sāngjō mādō dāne shabsō jēn, dāgē jēgyō jēbē sōnō jēn, dōlō pēnshē sāngjēn rūpār, jō sāngjēn jēdōn sōjē chōnō, sāngjō mādō dāne shabsō jēn, dāgē jēgyō jēbē sōnō jēn, dōlō pēnshē sāngjēn rūpār, jō sāngjēn jēdōn sōjē chōnō, sāngjō mādō dāne shabsō jēn, dāgē jēgyō jēbē sōnō jēn, dōlō pēnshē sāngjēn rūpār, jō sāngjēn jēdōn sōjē chōnō, sāngjō mādō dāne shabsō jēn, dāgē jēgyō jēbē sōnō jēn, dōlō pēnshē sāngjēn rūpār, jō sāngjēn jēdōn s che ti facevi chiedo, también ci vuole un po' di segno, perché non c'è niente sempre, se è sempre con il sempre che ho.
Let me remind all of ourselves to cultivate the altruistic motivation, seeking complete enlightenment for the sake of liberating infinite kind mother sentient beings. With that kind of bodhicitta motivation, we should all participate in this teaching. I believe that all of us are seeking the best of everything, both in the short term and long term, for ourselves and for all other sentient beings. In other words, what I mean to say here is that we are all seeking fortunate rebirths, you know, as our temporary goals, if you will, which would be the short-term goals. And for our long-term goals, we are seeking complete freedom from the suffering of samsara or cyclical existence, which is nirvana or liberation, and a complete enlightened state of Buddhahood as our ultimate spiritual goal. So in this life, we should all see to it that we strive to accomplish a goal that is of, you know, benefit to both self and others in an ultimate sense.
Some of that and drink it and that chimbo to drink it and cook up the tandanganzul near the rest.
So we have indeed found this wonderful opportunity to be able to strive for and accomplish a goal that from long-term perspective is of great benefit to both self and others. So having found this wonderful opportunity, we should all make sure that we don't fail from our side to grab the opportunity to make use of the opportunity. We find in both sutras, which are the scriptures containing the words of Buddha, and also in the commentarial treatises on Buddha's teachings called Shastras, many different methods or practices are being presented that we could all use. But having said that, just what I want to remind all of ourselves, this particular moment is what great Indian Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, Shantideva has got to say. And he said this in his Bodhisattva's Way of Life, a guide to Bodhisattva's Way of Life called Bodhisattva Char Avatar. And Geshe-la is quoting the lines from his memory. And Shantideva tells us that having found this precious human life, which metaphorically speaking is like a boat to cross the ocean or the river, we should try to cross this ocean of suffering, and so deliver ourselves, if you to the other side of the ocean, or to the state of liberation. The point that is being made here is that we have to recognize our own predicament or the situation we find ourselves in. So we are in this ocean of samsara with all kinds of suffering. But that being said, we are not completely, helpless, because we have found this wonderful boat-like precious human rebirth or life. And by making use of this life, this boat, we should be able to cross this ocean of samsara and free ourselves from the state of suffering. So having found this useful and wonderful boat to cross the ocean of samsara, we should make sure that we don't lose this boat. We don't, fail to use this boat. So Shantideva said the whole thing in a stanza. So in the first two lines of the stanza, he tells us that we have found this wonderful human life, which is like a useful boat that we could use to cross the ocean of suffering or samsara. In the second two lines of the stanza, he tells us, if you don't do that, then what happens? Is that it's very hard to find this kind of precious human life over and again in the future. Once we miss this opportunity, we lose this opportunity, it would be rather very difficult to find this kind of life, this kind of boat in the future. So understanding that, so then, what we need to do is we need to wake up from the sleep of ignorance and make best use of our opportunity and ability to liberate ourselves from the state of suffering. So that advice Shantideva gives is, I think, a very important advice, and that applies to all of us. So he's telling us, you know, don't kind of fall into the sleep of ignorance, or just kind of, or if we take it to mean ordinarily, don't waste our time just, you know, sleeping, meaning that we just kind of waste the whole opportunity before us, you know, just wake up from this deep sleep of ignorance and make the best use of our precious human life. And don't fall under the you know, influence of laziness and waste this precious life. And if you look carefully at our own life situations, most of us waste so much time being under the influence of laziness. So we need to work you know, for a living, and I believe that everybody has to work about 8 hours a day. And I mean, there are ways in which we can, you know, use our work situation into something that we can generate great meaning in life. But speaking purely from spiritual point of view, even working just for the sake of this lifetime, 8 hours or more, or whatever the case may be, that would be considered as being under the influence of laziness. We are just simply wasting our precious human life just to get by with our life, or just to fulfill the needs of this lifetime. So from totally spiritual point of view, simply doing that much for the life is considered a waste of time and being under the influence of laziness. So when we talk about different types of laziness, one of the laziness we talk about is called laziness of being attached to, literally translating, frivolous activities. Now the frivolous activities are to do with, you know, activities of just this lifetime. And of course, the important thing to keep in our mind is when we are very attached to this life and the interest of this life, so out of attachment and all other delusions, you know, focused on this lifetime, when we spend so much time, whether it's in a workplace or doing all other activities, that is considered as a form of laziness of being attached to frivolous activities. So out of attachment to, you know, basic necessities of life, to name and, you know, fame and reputation and all of the stuff that you all know very well, is considered from a spiritual point of view being under the influence of that particular kind of laziness. But that being said, and which we need to understand, recognize, but also I often tell you how we could also use the 8 hours of work period, if you will, if that's our like schedule, 8 hour work per day, we could also kind of bring spiritual meaning into our work. So it doesn't have to be just ordinary work. It could also be something, you know, spiritually meaningful.
So
how can we make our ordinary work into something spiritually meaningful, you ask? Of course, one of the most important factors, if not the most important, is to do it with what we call the proper spiritual motivation. So when we get up in the morning and before we leave our home for work, if we cultivate this kind of motivation, the very purpose of me going to the work is, of course, realistically speaking and practically speaking, I need to work to pay the bills. But at the same time, there's more to it. It's not just to get by life, going to the work, but by going to the work, I'm able to provide resources to myself, so that, outside the work, if you will, that I find time to do my practice so that I can provide resources to be able to sustain my, sustain my practice. Of course, I could go and beg, on the street, but that does not seem to be conventionally, acceptable to the people in the society. That's not a normative behavior. So I have to follow the rules and regulations of the society, and so people conventionally are expected to go to work, and so you earn, so bring the earnings, and so that you're able to use it to sustain your practice and to be able to provide yourself more, opportunities and resources to do your practice. So we cultivate that kind of motivation, and then we go to work, and of course, then whatever earnings we have, we also try to use it as much as we can to, to fulfill our motivation. It's not like, we're tricking ourselves, have a good motivation, go there and make the money, and then, do something else. Well, that's, disparity there. But we try to do as much as we can, the earnings, to sustain our, our practice. So if you really cultivate good motivation and go make the earnings and then use it for something else, I think Geshe-la would like to use my expert. Then we become dodos, I think. So, but that's not the only one kind of laziness we need to deal with. The laziness of being, stuck with, all kind of worldly concerns and activities, and just to get by this life, or to fulfill all the, the interest of this lifetime. But the other kind of laziness that we also need to watch out, and which is what we call laziness of procrastination. And we are all very vulnerable to this kind of laziness. We all have to watch out with this, because we may not, even if we don't have to work, let's say, for whatever reasons, but we could still easily be under the influence of this form of laziness. Today I'm kind of, busy, so I'll do my practice tomorrow. And then tomorrow comes, we push it even further, right? Okay, today is even more busy, so it will be the next day. Okay? And as we keep on procrastinating our practice, so before we get the chance to do our practice, the death strikes us. Okay? Life comes to an end. And so we lose the whole opportunity. So we all have to be very careful, with this kind of laziness of procrastination. And then also there's another kind of laziness, which is called, the laziness of sort of underestimation, which is to say that when it comes to doing spiritual practice, we kind of have this sense of, you always tell ourselves, you know what, I can't do it. You know, I'm not up to do this practice. And we don't have the courage, to take the risk, if you will, to do the practice. But we always have an excuse. I can't do it. This is not for me, or whatever, case may be. So, but that is itself is discouraging oneself, underestimating one's own ability to do a practice is a form of laziness. So the point I'm trying to make here is, we should see that we are not under the influence of any of or all of these different types of laziness, and then we miss the opportunity to cultivate spirituality or to practice Dharma. So as much as we have to see that we are not influenced by different forms of laziness, and then we miss the whole opportunity to practice, but we also need to see that the practice which we are going to adopt or we are going to follow, the spirituality, is an authentic spirituality. So it's not enough for us to say, I'm going to do this practice because, everybody says this is a good one, But we really have to take time to find out whether the practice or the spirituality that we are going to adopt and follow is authentic in the sense that has there, been highly realized peoples, the masters, who followed this kind of a way or the path, and they have reached very high realization, which means this path is authentic. It leads to the spiritual goals that we would like to accomplish. It's not a mistaken path or mistaken way. And so is it grounded in what we call valid reasonings? Are there good rationals, reasons to support that this is an authentic practice? So we have to really make sure that spirituality that we are going to adopt is based on sound reasonings, valid reasonings, and that it has been followed by other practitioners, and they have reached a high levels of realization. And so when we really examine the authenticity of our path, we really have to see that does it really lead to higher spiritual goals? Not that, sometimes we can easily be duped by, some people say, if you do this kind of practice, then you will have certain kind of clairvoyant power, so then you can tell what's going on in somebody's mind a little bit. Or, or you have some kind of extrasensory power to talk about or to tell the story, but that's not good enough as a criteria to judge whether spirituality is authentic or not. So the point I'm trying to make here is, we really, in order to find out authenticity of a path or a practice, we have to say whether it really provides the complete structure of the path that unmistakably leads us to fulfilling the spiritual goals. Yeah, so it's not enough to say that this kind of practice is good, because then you get some kind of extra, ESP, sort of thing, and so you, you're okay. No, that's not good enough. I think great Indian master Acharya Dharmakirti, in his Valid Cognition Treatises, Brahmanas says, as Geshe says, if that much is enough, then we do find sentient beings with certain extra abilities. For example, vultures have this extra sense of what exists at a great distance that our eyes do not see, you know, but they can see, you know, behind certain things that exist and we can. So that means, you know, they have certain amazing power that we humans don't have. Now, does that mean that now we cultivate the vultures as our guru, you know, because they got some power? Well, that makes no sense. Or even if we believe that some of the, for lack of a better words in English, maybe not the demons, some are invisible, not the good guys, but the bad guys, invisible beings, you know, they have certain extra sensory power. You know, they do have certain power, and so, but we can't go and cultivate them as our gurus. So we need to rely upon a person who is what we call, for lack of a better again word in English, called a valid person. In Tibetan called Tseme Kibo, somebody who cannot make mistakes. Okay, a valid, authentic person. So we find such a person in Shakyamuni Buddha, the historical teacher who is the founding teacher of Buddhism. Because many other masters have relied upon his teachings and they become highly realized beings. And again, great Dharmakirti has said in praise to Shakyamuni Buddha that you are, you know, a truly an authentic, valid person, not only a valid person in that sense, but you have this infinite, infinite care, caring compassion for sentient beings. So therefore, you are qualified to be a spiritual guide. So if we would like go to Buddhahood, that as our ultimate spiritual destination, then there are a number of things that we must do or learn to do. Number one, instead of considering self as more important than the others, we have to kind of reverse it, and we have to understand that others are more important than self. So others before self. Number two, instead of cherishing self like anything over the others, now we have to change our attitude and learn to cherish others more than the self. So cherishing others is much more important than self-cherishing attitude or self-centeredness. Of course, we are not saying that, you know, everything I'm saying here, so we have to kind of accept them, based on the faith. You know, we have every right and we should investigate the matters. Why is it important to cherish others more than the self? And so in the Buddhist literatures, we find descriptions of or explanations of what are the demerits or the disadvantages of self-centeredness or self-cherishing attitude, and what are the benefits or the merits of cherishing other sentient beings. So we can study them and we can investigate these matters. In the Buddhist literatures, we talk about how Shakyamuni Buddha as an example of a Buddha or complete enlightened being. So when we say Buddha, by definition, what it really means to talk about is a Buddha is a person who is completely free of all kinds of negativities, delusions, and mental obscurations, with all kinds of faults and errors and mistakes, you know. And a Buddha is a person who is completely enlightened in the sense that all the remarkable qualities that are there to be obtained or actualized are embodied in an enlightened person. So such a person is called a Buddha.
So the Tang Maranzu is Tamji Yun Khin.
So now we kind of put Buddha, so to speak, on the one side, you know, who is completely enlightened, who does not have any faults or errors or defilements or negativities and mental obscurations, but who is with all the enlightened qualities, and there's nothing left for Buddha to be actualized because all the remarkable qualities are embodied in him or her. Then now we look at ourselves as ordinary people. Where do we stand now? Compare ourselves to Buddha. We are just the opposite. You know, we are just very rich in terms of negativities and delusions and mental obscurations, and we just, you know, have too many of them. And these are the things really are not good stuff. We need to get rid of, but we somehow keep them, and we are very rich. And in terms of realizations, we hardly have any. You know, when talk about remarkable qualities, how many do we have? If we are fortunate, we might have just few. Maybe not. And this is our situation. Completely deluded, rich in, you know, all the delusions and all this stuff we shouldn't be rich in, you know, proud of, but in terms of realizations, we really don't have much. But we have to recognize the fact that there was a time where a Buddha, or including Shakyamuni Buddha, was just like us, completely deluded person. Okay, so that could be many, many eons ago, okay, but it was true. So Buddha did not come out of a blue as a Buddha, you know, like randomly appeared as a Buddha, but that cannot happen. But there was a time, you know, we were all same. Buddha was just like us, very deluded, you know, full of, you know, rich in negativities and all of that. But Buddha changed the course of actions and attitudes and went different direction. So there was a time any Buddha was just like us, ordinary person, deluded, a lot of negativities and not many good qualities. But there are Buddhas now, and we compare ourselves to them, there is a big difference between us. And why this big difference? You know, how has this happened? If we wonder, is Buddha learned to cherish others much more than the self, whereas we have pursued the same path that we have been pursuing for ages. You know, we have been cherishing self over others, but Buddha somewhere, you know, changed their attitudes and cherished others more than the self, and that's the direction they took, and that's why they ended up in a different state. So we have Buddha as a role model for ourselves because we would like to be a Buddha. And if that's what we want to be, then now we have to learn to cherish others and let go self-cherishing attitude. And so we talk about, how should I say, when we say let go self-cherishing attitude, we don't mean that, okay, now, you know, you can't do anything for yourself and it's time to commit suicide or something. No. What we're talking about is that we should learn to, you know, counteract our self-centeredness, selfishness. You know, that's the part we need to let go. But of course, we need to take care of ourselves. But letting go self-cherishing attitude doesn't mean we, you know, let go taking care of ourselves. But we learn a new attitude, if you will, to cherish others more than the self.
That cousin, dik kanda chembo dos kasi ngay chik ten ma shu sar di na ali chad chik shu gyo ani du gishi shinga wa ke ani thaba da thangi chembo thaba shay pa la se jitin ba thada ta minti ba ki la lab gure iska nang suwa se.
So last week we did talk about what the great Kadamba Geshe Chengawa has got to say, and he was telling us that you know, we need to adopt attitude and behavior which are really different from the worldly people, right? We talked about that, and I thought these are still very important, and I today want to recapitulate and to focus on the reasons why, you know, what he is saying is important, and we need to put into practice.
That then the ma tinsam kuthon ma hegyo reste.
Yes. And so I'm going to continue where we left off in the text before.
No, no. That they can raise, na. Jitenpa nam na sita, ngaransun jitenpa nam kish, ngaransun tang huni rita. Senjin le, senjin wei sendo senjin le, sanje kipran zingar was. Ta ngaransun du sin, ngaransun ta su sin na mendu, ta ngaransun lo ndus pa du sani, senjin ta sanje nyin sin na ni, churang kari kipran zingi sin sanje kipran zing sangdo wei kar sangdo was.
So what do we as worldly people do or think about, and Geshe Chenpa says that worldly people, if we are given a choice, who do we want to cherish, Buddhas or sentient beings, we pick Buddhas over sentient beings. You know, that's what we as worldly people do. You know, we want to cherish Buddhas, but we really don't seem to care about sentient beings.
And Sanjila Mugubatan Mons and Aran Samaloga. Sanjila Mugubatan Mugubatan Yungumaravata, Dana Jangur, what the Penant Dana Yuban of Jeta. Deves, Dele Chance, Deve. Sanjila Junsi, ye Kibran Zingures.
Maybe part of the reason why we choose Buddha over sentient being is because, you know, we find Buddha very agreeable. You know, it's easy to kind of relate to Buddha, you know. So we can easily respect Buddhas. You know, most of us, you know, we don't have problem doing that. You know, maybe some of us have to learn how to do that. But still, Buddhas are pretty easy in that sense to, you know, relate to. Whereas when it comes to sentient beings, we have the real challenge. And it's not easy to cherish sentient beings, but Geshe Chenpa was saying that, well, we got to cherish sentient beings, and there are, you know, four reasons which we could use to learn to cherish sentient beings. Again, when we talk about cherishing Buddha, you know, we must not have some kind of very abstract notion of a Buddha. You know, cherishing Buddha means like there's somewhere up in the cyberspace, there's somebody called Buddha in a sort of abstract, you know, very love, you know, lofty figure image somewhere there. Oh, that's what we need to cherish,
you know.
Buddha is, not an abstract state necessarily. We can recognize beings or people who are Buddhas, enlightened beings. So when we talk about a Buddha or enlightened being, what we're really talking about is someone who is completely free of the two types of mental obscuration. Number one, called delusions, nyomo, kleshyas, and number two, obscuration to omniscient wisdom. So a Buddha is someone who is completely free of these two types of mental obscuration. In addition to that, Buddha is someone who has omniscient knowledge or wisdom that can directly or non-conceptually perceive everything that exists, you know, in the past, in the present, and in the future simultaneously. And also Buddha is someone, you know, who has this enlightened speech quality to be able to fulfill, fulfill the spiritual needs of, you know, sentient beings from different backgrounds. The point I'm trying to make here is when we cultivate faith or trust in a Buddha or Buddhas, you know, we do that by reflecting on the enlightened qualities of Buddha's body, physical, you know, form, speech, and mind. So according to Geshe Chekhaba, there are four reasons we could use to learn to cherish sentient beings. So the reason number one that's been given is we have to recognize that all sentient beings have become our kind parents. Of course, we use the parents as an example, but we could also say that all sentient beings have been our brothers, sisters, best friends. And so sentient, we have that kind of relationship with sentient beings. So with that kind of connection between us and sentient beings, while we have been in samsara, cyclical existence, sentient beings have become our moms, our dads, our brothers, sisters, best friends, and all of that. And now they are in a difficult situation because samsara is not a happy place. It has a lot of suffering. And so it is our, I should say, responsibility, if you will, to help, if we can, sentient beings to be free from suffering. So the way we cherish sentient beings is that there's nobody out there, you know, who is to be excluded, right? Oh, no, not this particular XYZ sentient being. I have nothing to do with. No, every sentient being has to be kind of recognized as someone that we need to benefit, that we need to cherish. So if we adopt that kind of attitude, if all sentient beings have been very kind to us, as mom, dad, brother, sister, sibling, whatever, then, you know, really, we cannot think of harming them, can we? And if someone even harms us, if we are in that mindset, the sentient beings have been kind to us, and we need to cherish them, then we are not going to retaliate against those beings.
That's...
From another side, as we benefit sentient beings and cherish sentient beings, we are also taking care of our own spiritual needs. You know, it's not like we just totally doing something for them and our own needs are left off on the side. But by benefiting them, we are indirectly benefiting ourselves. So when we talk about fulfilling our own needs or the purposes, we can talk in terms of short-term goals and long-term goals, right? All the short-term benefits and long-term benefits. An ultimate benefit that we can give ourselves is to become a complete enlightened being or a Buddha, and that has to come through cherishing sentient beings. You know, it's by way of cherishing sentient beings we are able to become an enlightened being, so that is fulfilling the ultimate goal for our own sake. To fulfill our temporary needs also, we are very much dependent on sentient beings. Without other sentient beings, you know, we cannot really fulfill even our temporary needs. So as we really reflect on these matters, we need to should try to go more into details as much as we could, so that we really, bring substance to our reflection. You know, not like sort of in a generic sense, kind of like, we kind of feel like, okay, they are kind and nice, but really there's no substance to our thought. But really, as we consider the details, for example, temporarily speaking, where do we get all our basic necessities of life? Food, clothing, shelter, and everything else, by the grace of and through the help of other sentient beings. So when we really think this matter deeply, without other sentient beings, we can't think of something that we alone can do, you know, for ourselves. You know, without, the other sentient beings in the picture, there's nothing we can think of that we can say, okay, this is just on my own. I don't need anybody here. So if there's such thing, you know, that exists sort of, without any direct relationship with others, is maybe just our own consciousness. Just the mind. But even that one, in order to take rebirth, of course, from the womb of the mothers, we assume that, is we have to conceive in the womb of a mother. That means we need somebody else that we need to conceive into somebody's womb, right? We don't conceive into our own womb. So, we need somebody there.
So
the point I'm trying to, you know, drive home here is that through all possible ways and means, we should think about how other sentient beings are kind to us, you know, here and now, temporarily, and also in terms of fulfilling our ultimate spiritual goals. So if sentient beings are kind to us temporarily and from ultimate perspective, then who do we really need to benefit? Sentient beings. Ordinarily speaking, if somebody has been kind to us and if we don't return or repay their kindness, it's very unbecoming of us, isn't it? So it's the same here. Sentient beings have been kind to us here and now, and in fulfilling the long-term goals, so therefore we need to repay their kindness. We need, you know, we otherwise it will be unbecoming on our part. So the point I just made here is, it is relying upon sentient beings through their grace and help that we are able to fulfill our temporary needs as well as our ultimate spiritual goals. So if we have that deep understanding, then of course we cannot harm any sentient being through our actions of body, speech, and mind. Because there's no such thing as friends, enemies, and strangers. Because all of them are our friends. And another reason that's given, that we could use to cherish sentient beings is, if we cherish sentient beings, that amounts to cherishing Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. You know, if we help sentient beings, so that's like same as making offerings to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. If we help or make offerings to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, that would not be the same as making offerings to sentient beings. On the other hand, if we fulfill the needs of the sentient beings, if we practice generosity, and if we help the poor and needy, now that help amounts to making offering to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas as well. And last time I used this example, and you may be able to recall this, I said, like, let's take an example of very loving parents who love their kids like anything. So now if you make a gift to the children, this really makes the parents very happy. They are very delighted. So it's like you make a gift to the children, but parents feel like they have been given a gift as well, and they feel very happy. But if you make a gift to the parents, that wouldn't be the same as giving a gift to the kids. The kids don't think they got a gift. Okay? So it's that, just like that. When we make a gift to sentient beings, that amounts to giving a gift to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. But if we give a gift to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, sentient beings don't think we got the gifts.
Okay. That's the majiba shavuras.
So now don't forget that.
Yes.
So the point beside this is, like, when parents get really old, so the kids should take care of them, so don't forget them. So, Kishi Chenpa gave us those four reasons to which we talked about last week, and did some today, why we need to learn to cherish sentient beings, more than the Buddhas. I think I also quoted some words from Sutras last week, where it is said that if we pay salutation to or protest to Tathagatas or the Buddhas, that would not be the same as, saluting or protesting to Bodhisattvas. But if we protest to Bodhisattvas, that would be the same as prostrating to or paying respect to Buddhas. So I think we also use that example from the sutra, which says, if we pay respect to the waxing moon, the different phases of the moon, then that would be amount to paying sort of appreciation to the full moon. But if you just appreciate the full moon, that would not be the same as appreciating all those waxing moons or the different phases of the moon. That's just using an example. You know, we are not saying that we as a Buddhist go for refuge in the moon or sun or those planets. But there are people who do, because they think these are objects of refuge. So for them, because they need to find a way to respect the moon and sun. Otherwise, you might get this misnotion like, we are talking about now need to seek refuge in moon and sun and stars and all that. We are not saying that.
Okay. Tan gite padam rage chu dungge chong gite padam me tebe shes ka nang su dangi sawe sawe te ka nang yor bas shes.
So the basic kind of a contention and the premise of the Geshe Chenpa is that if we want to be really spiritual practitioners, we have to do almost just the opposite of the worldly beings, so our behavior and attitudes should not accord with the attitudes and behaviors of ordinary sentient beings, ordinary people. So Geshe Chenpa talks about these four different ways in which we need to do it differently than the ordinary beings. The number one we talked about is ordinary people cherish Buddhas over sentient beings. Now we need to learn to cherish sentient beings over Buddhas. So that's just the opposite, Now the second point he's making is ordinary people cherish self over others. Now we need to learn to cherish others over self. So why do we need to bring about that kind of inner transformation in us? Like instead of cherishing self, now we need to a shift in our thinking and cherish others more than the self. Is since beginningless time until now, that is how we have done. We have cherished self like anything, but what it has done to us is it has always got us into more trouble and suffering. That's because, any kind of negative karmas or negativities we create and accumulate are related to that self-cherishing attitude. Great Indian realized Buddhist scholar Acharya Chandrakirti says in his supplement to the Middle Way or Madhyamik Avatar, and Geshe-la quoted the stanza from his memory, so where he says that Tangpo ngase dala senjuji, first there arises the conception of I, there's the grasping at I, because I is so important. Yeah. And then arises the conception of mind or grasping at mind. And so this is why we end up in different states of suffering. So first, when we talk about the two types of grasping, grasping at self and grasping at the self of a person and grasping at self of phenomena. So first there arises grasping at I is so important. Then anything related to I, which is mine, is important. My car, my house, my nose, my ears, my body, my hair, and all of that. Okay. So everything to do with mind is so important. And this is how we bump into problems and suffering because of these graspings.
Ah, So
because of that kind of grasping, we categorize beings into, you know, us versus them, or my side versus the other side. And so we cherish people on my side because it's all mine, my friends. And then everybody else over that side is something to hate or, you know, we don't like. And so in that way, you know, our attitudes are all discriminatory and biased towards people, mine and their side. And then we indulge in many different negative actions.
So that
So the all kinds of negativities that we find ourselves creating or indulging in, and all kinds of delusions that we experience, basically all of them are grounded in self-cherishing attitude and self-grasping. So these are the two main sources of all our delusions and negativities. So, people have a saying, Prabhupada Kesa says, you know, you might find similar sayings in other languages and maybe here too, like, first me and then others. Yeah, so that's how our, you know, thinking goes. So from Dharma point of view, that's, you know, completely contradictory to the Dharma principle. So from Dharma point of view, we have to say first they and then me, right? First others and then me, but that's what we are saying, you know, or thinking usually. So we have to be really focused and don't to get caught up in hustle and bustle kind of thinking. So as I speak to you, I also speak to myself. You know, it's not like I'm talking about you. I include myself. You know, our life is so much caught up in hustle and bustle thing, you know, because of our way of thinking. First me and then others and all of that. So we really need to pay attention to these things, all of us, including myself. So the true practitioners, they think first others and then self or me. See, so this is what we need to learn to do. So we need to learn to cherish others. We need to learn to let go self-cherishing attitude. You know, self-cherishing attitude is not something we really need to learn about. You know, that's, we have to let go that part. To be able to cherish others, of course, we need to see the benefits of doing that, right? Or the, maybe in today's language, the profits. What profits do we get out of cherishing others? Now, when we think about spiritual practice and fulfilling our spiritual goals, one of the essential things we need to do is accumulate merit, positive energy, and wisdom. Okay, so we could only do that with regard to other sentient beings. So sentient beings provide us the opportunity, okay, to accumulate merit and wisdom. Ordinarily speaking, when we think in terms of the vegetables or the grains, and that are all part of our food, where do we get them? We get them from fields, right? We have to have fertile soil or the lands to grow them, and that's the source of all our food. So in the same way, metaphorically speaking, sentient beings are the field, you know, in which we grow our spiritual qualities. So it's in regard to them, in relation to them, that we accumulate merit and wisdom. So creating merit, a big part of that is when we appreciate and cherish others. I think it is stated in A Guide to Bodhisattva's Way of Life, where, you know, every misery in the world and the problems, they come from self-cherishing attitude. And every goodness or the prosperity and good things in the world, that comes from cherishing others.
So that kada we get hit so in the sungu jani kun to sa de kada tenju jin tu ni sungu yama ta ha se pe sungje de sungu yama re.
So as we listen to great Kadamba Geshe's personal advices, these advices are all firmly grounded in you know, what Buddha has said in sutras and what the commentary treatises or the shastras have got to say. It's not like, you know, something appears randomly in their mind and then they just keep on giving these advices. You know, all of these are based in Buddha's teachings. So that goes with all the you know, authentic Buddhist literatures, whether it's sutra or tantra, that they must be able to trace back to what Buddha originally said, and that's important. So we need to cherish other sentient beings over the self because there are many good reasons. It is by way of cherishing other sentient beings that we are able to cultivate and experience the two types of bodhicitta or altruism, the conventional bodhicitta and ultimate bodhicitta. These bodhicittas could only arise when we learn to cherish other sentient beings. And eventually we could become a Buddha, fully enlightened being. That too depends on cherishing other sentient beings. So now we can see how important precious sentient beings are to our own spiritual development. So everything we talk about and we find I mean, in this kind of a text are very important I mean, teachings to us. And it's not only that they just kind of spell out what are important for us, they also started to tell us how to cultivate these qualities. And we will stop there today. I don't have any special prayer request, but Kesala would like to remind all of us to think about many people, especially have died in the wars and under different circumstances. So we want to think about people who have lost their precious lives and together do prayer for them. And I just want to, you know, remind you that if you would like to help us send some letters, you know, this is, you know, to our senators and congressmen and women, you know, help bring the repression in Tibet down. put an end. So we have got many copies of the letters in the lobbies, and also the address of the concerned officials that you could mail the letters to. Let us dedicate our collective merit for the flourishing of Dharma, the source of benefits and happiness throughout the universe. May His Holiness the Dalai Lama and all other holy masters live long and be successful in fulfilling their visions, benefiting sentient beings. May spiritual communities throughout the world and spiritual practitioners from all traditions remain healthy, harmonious, and be successful in fulfilling their spiritual aspirations. May this and other world environments be free of all kinds of unwanted pains and problems, and beings find peace, happiness, prosperity, and spirituality. Last but not least, we dedicate our collective positive energy for all kind mother sentient beings to be free from the fears and dangers of delusions as well as the imprints of delusions on our minds, and may we all reach complete enlightened state quickly. Actually, I forgot to say something, I think, because I didn't write it down. Most people know, what's happening in Tibet, and I think tomorrow is considered like a global action day. So across the world, Tibetans and friends are going to protest in front of communist consulates around the world. So I think tomorrow we have one at Los Angeles from 3 to 5. If you do have time, we would appreciate your support. And another news I want to share is that we fear that what happened in Tibet, because they were trying to blame the monks, you know, for killing or destroying stuff. But we also suspected that communist police were, you know, pretending to be monks' troops. And now the British satellites have got the evidence, and that I think a number of People's Liberation Armies were issued a set of monks' robes, and they were all carrying it. So they put on the monks' robe and then, you know, pretend to be monks and, you know, burn stuff and kill someone, so then they can claim down on Tibetans, you know. So it's a very sad situation, but we're glad there's some satellite evidence have come up, you know. All right, then you have a nice lunch.